skipping and a jumping in the misty morning fog with our hearts a thumping, and you, my brown eyed girl. Tuesday and so slow, gone down the old man with a transistor radio, standing in the sunlight laughing, hiding behind a rainbow's wall, slipping and sliding.
In case you want to know how I feel about you, darling, I just want to let you know that, I'm with you.
Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Unite Here hotel workers in Washington, D.C. have overwhelmingly approved a very good contract, won through strong solidarity and smart tactics and timing. Unite Here Local 25 Secretary Treasurer John Boardman.
Virtually every major section of the contract we sought to change, we prevailed upon.
In a big victory for workers, Unite Here won the largest wage hikes in 25 years, 100% employer-paid health insurance, and a 30% increase in pensions. Workers at other hotels have noticed, and Boardman says it's time to organize.
We're already being contacted by workers in other hotels here in Washington who want to see the union come to their property. So we're going to take this and go out and organize.
Unite Here says there are changes to almost every article of the contract designed to improve conditions in the workplace and strengthen the rights of workers. Unite Here had threatened to strike during the inauguration unless they got a good contract.
The fallout of Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels' decision to end collective bargaining for state employees has begun. The International Union of Police Association Local 1041 voted unanimously to dissolve. In addition to representing state troopers, the local also represented the state's conservation officers. Keith Gill, former president of the local, said the decision was made because the union no longer had a purpose without the right to collectively bargain. The Republican governor canceled union contracts with nearly 25,000 state workers last week.
George W. Bush is using the Social Security Administration, including Social Security Associate Commissioner Andrew Biggs, to push privatization of Social Security. Biggs was the Cato Institute's assistant director on the project on Social Security privatization. Social Security employees, represented by the National Treasury Employees Union, resent the use of the Social Security Administration to push privatization propaganda. NTEU President Colleen Kelly says her members will join workers nationwide to oppose the undermining of Social Security. Kelly says defending Social Security will be a priority for Social Security Administration workers.
We will be making this one of our legislative priorities, and we will be working with all of those in the House and the Senate to make sure that they, too, understand the issues, the impact, and what the facts are around this issue, as well as the fiction.
Henry Aaron, a Social Security analyst at the Brookings Institution, says talk of Social Security crisis is nonsense in an effort to stampede the public.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most famous cigar country in the world is making moves to snuff out smoking. Statistics show that 4 out of 10 Cubans smoke. And of the 15,000 deaths from preventable cancer in Cuba each year, 30% of those have been linked to smoking. The island will ban smoking in most public areas. President Fidel Castro, who gave up cigars years ago, says that when Cubans give cigars away, they say, smoke them or give them to someone who smokes. But the best thing to do is to give them to your enemy. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
It would be funny watching George W. running around the country on his little stick horse, pretending to be a reformer, if it was not so sad, so wrong. His latest war whoop is that, by gollies, he wants to reform the so-called tort laws so HMOs, hospitals, doctors, and drug companies can't be driven out of business by us patients who sue them when their practices harm us. Bush's handler sent him to Collinsville, Illinois, just outside of St. Louis, where he held a photo op and labeled both St. Clair and Madison counties as, quote, judicial hell holes. He noted the 720 malpractice and wrongful death suits have been filed there against area practitioners in the past 7 years, with jury awards causing enormous economic damage to them and curtailing health care in the area. The issue of tort law has long been the prerogative of state governments, but George says it now must be federalized because, he says, that, quote, junk lawsuits are proliferating all over. Juries, he wailed, are handing out such massive judgments to patients who sue that entire hospitals, groups of doctors, and other medical businesses are shutting down. Problem is, it just ain't so. The watchdog group Public Citizen found that of the 720 cases that George cited, only 14 resulted in jury verdicts, and only 7 of those verdicts sided with the patients. Excuse me, but 7 verdicts in 7 years is hardly a federal crisis. Moreover, Bush's proposed remedy is to cap pain and suffering damages at $250,000 per case. Yet in the 2 counties cited by George as judicial hellholes, only 1 case, 1, resulted in a jury award that exceeded this cap. Again, this is hardly a runaway system requiring federal intervention. This is Jim Hightower saying, to put some truth on Bush's lies about junk lawsuits and to help defend your legal rights, call Public Citizen, 202-588-7741.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, I think Dante said it best. The hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in times of great moral crisis, maintain their neutrality. The majority of the committee investigating or listening to. But there's not even a right word for this. Doing the dance with Condi Rice this morning. Although I have to say, Barbara Boxer did it again. God bless her. And John Kerry spoke up. It looks like these are going to be the two who are going to vote against the confirmation of Condi Rice. This absolutely remarkable. Our other quote for the day from John Stuart Mill. He was born in 1809, died in 1873. He wrote On Liberty, his most famous piece, although he also wrote a booklet in 1861, which outlined how a proportional representation style government could work and upon which most democracies are today based. John Stuart Mill, one of the great political thinkers of all time, wrote, and I quote, "Although it is not true that all conservatives are stupid people, it is true that most stupid people are conservatives." Our quote for the day from John Stuart Mill, 1809 to 1873. Today, some of the things we're going to cover, what happens when government is taken over by people who don't believe in or understand government? How is this administration buying off and corrupting churches? See, most people think that the whole point of the First Amendment was to keep churches from taking over the government. Not true. As James Madison pointed out at length, the main point of the First Amendment, separating church and state, was to prevent churches from being corrupted by government. And sure enough, it's happening. We'll get into that later on in the program. What about the HMO debacle? How did it happen that HMOs went from being helpful to being parasites? And how is the administration helping this administration, the Bush administration, how do they help Saddam smuggle oil? Primarily to its neighbors, Turkey and Jordan, and some to Syria. What would you call it, scandal that you're not hearing about from the conservative press or media. We'll be getting to that today as well. Lots and lots of interesting things in the program today. Welcome, by the way, to the Tom Hartman Show, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Here we are, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, our website if you want to drop into the chat room. And let's start out here. With?
It's 291 billion pounds, Dr. Calculus.
Well, let me see. That would be 145 million and a half tons of the,
refuse.
Yeah, refuse. Yes,
our bush.
Here, let me figure. Over 53 million tons of,
manure?
Manure, yeah. By comparison, the pyramid of the Pharaoh Cheops weighs about 690 million tons, which means that every 4 and 3, you've got a pile of this,
excrement.
Yeah.
Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starch?
Yeah, it's time for our Bush Happens alert.
Bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts.
The Salon magazine has published a list of the 35 largest scandals of the last 4 years, the Bush administration, and none of these are things that would have slid by had Congress not been controlled by the Republicans. It is some huge stuff, and so from time to time I will share one with you today. The Memogate, the Senate computer theft. This is again from this article by Peter Dzykes in Salon.com. From 2001 to 2003... for a two-year period, Republican staffers on the Senate Judiciary Committee illicitly accessed nearly 5,000 computer files containing confidential Democratic strategy memos about President Bush's judicial nominees. The GOP used the memos to shape their own plans and leaked some to the media. You may recall that what Watergate was all about was breaking into the Democratic National Headquarters in the Watergate Hotel to get information. Republican staffers on the Senate Judiciary Committee broke into Democratic computers, the senator's computers, for a two-year period, 5,000 break-ins. The Computer Fraud and Abuse Act states it is illegal to obtain confidential information from a government computer. Someone has committed a major crime here. John Ashcroft has assigned a prosecutor to the case. The staff member at the heart of the matter, Manuel Miranda, has attempted to brazen it out, filing suit in September 2004 against the Department of Justice to end the investigation. He complained, a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich. So our Bush Happens alert for the day. Condi Rice trying to continue with her prevarications. I think it's interesting. Today, Bernie Sanders, big headline in the newspaper here in Vermont. Bernie Sanders called George Bush a liar. There you go. We'll get to more on that. We'll get to more on that as the day goes on. But Secretary of State nominee Condoleezza Rice gave no ground, writes Ann Guerin in the Associated Press, gave no ground in Senate confirmation questioning Tuesday, insisting the United States was fully prepared for the Iraq war and its aftermath and refusing to give a timetable for U.S. troops to come home. Did you get this? And this is just absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, over the top? Yeah, over the top. I think that that's a good way of saying it. In fact, here's a little clip from the Barbara Boxer yesterday. Just share some little pieces of this with you.
War was sold to the American people, as Chief of Staff to President Bush, Andy Card, said, like a new product. Those are his words. Now, you rolled out the idea And then you had to convince the people as you made your case with the president. And I personally believe, this is my personal view, that your loyalty to the mission you were given to sell this war overwhelmed your respect for the truth. You know, if you were rolling out a new product, like a can opener, who would care?
Exactly. But it overwhelmed her respect for the truth. I mean, this is calling Condi Rice a liar. And in fact, Center for American Progress today on their website has a list of 50 lies she's told. 50. About the war in Iraq. We have heard many of them as she's wandered around in all the various talk shows over the last 4 years. Anyhow, Barbara Boxer continues.
About what we said. But this product is a war. And people are dead and dying. And as much as I want to look ahead, and we will work together on a myriad of issues, it's hard for me to let go of this war because people are still dying. And you have not laid out an exit strategy. You've not set up a timetable. And you don't seem to be willing to, A, admit a mistake or give any indication of what you're going to do to forcefully involve others. Senator.
And so Condi Rice, her response sort of speaks for itself, actually. She doesn't address any of these issues. She basically says, what? How dare you call me a liar?
I have to say that I have never, ever lost respect for the truth in the service of anything.
Well, Condi, how about all those misstatements? How about all those factual inaccuracies? How about all those lies you've told?
It is not my nature. It is not my character. And I would...
You know, I just have to interrupt her here. Sorry, Condi. But would it be the nature of a liar to insist that they're not a liar? I mean, just a rhetorical question, I suppose.
Hope that we can have this conversation and discuss what happened before and what went on before and what I said without impugning my credibility or my integrity.
Yeah. In other words, I'm not going to answer your question about the things that I've said, and I'm not going to take responsibility, she says, about anything.
We went to war not because of aluminum tubes. We went to war...
Oh, wait a minute. You told us we went to war because of aluminum tubes.
Or because this was the threat of weapons of mass destruction in the hands of a man against whom we had gone to war before, who threatened his neighbors, who threatened our interests, who was the world's one of the world's most brutal dictators, and it was high time to get rid of him. And I'm glad that we're rid of him.
You and I could sit here and go back and forth and present our arguments, and maybe somebody watching a debate would pick one or the other, depending on their own views.
Yeah, there you go. Barbara Boxer now responding to Condi Rice. I mean, Rice is continuing to say things like all the other countries thought that he had weapons of mass destruction, when in fact most of the countries of Europe did not think he had weapons of mass destruction. Hans Blix was saying he did not have. She's continuing to say, for example, the CIA thought he had weapons of mass destruction. In fact, there were major voices inside the CIA saying, no, he doesn't have weapons of mass destruction. The Department of Energy said, no, there are no weapons of mass destruction. The Department of there were folks within the Department of Defense who were raising questions. None of these voices were addressed. None of these.
But I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in the facts. Again, you said you're aware of the stakes in Iraq. We sent our beautiful people, and thank you so much for your comments about them, to defend freedom. You sent them in there because of weapons of mass destruction. Later, the mission changed when there were none. I have your quotes on it. I have the president's quotes on it. And everybody admits it but you, that was the reason for the war. And then once we're in there, now it moved to a different mission, which is great. We all want to give democracy and freedom everywhere we can possibly do it. But let's not rewrite history.
She's just about to say, let's not rewrite history. It's too early for that. Which gives me some cause for pause. It's too early to rewrite history. But in any case, here we go.
But let's not rewrite history. It's too soon to do that.
It was the total picture, Senator, not just weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, yeah?
That caused us to decide that post-September 11th, it was finally time to deal with the thing.
See, drag 9/11 into it one more time, even though Saddam had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. Here's Condi Rice continuing this administration line. Of
lie, both. Take your choice. Of dragging 9/11 into any discussion that involves Iraq, even though Saddam Hussein had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11, and in fact he hated Osama bin Laden, and Osama bin Laden hated him.
You should read what we voted on when we voted to support the war, which I did not, but most of my colleagues did. It was WMD, period. That was the reason and the causation for that, you know, particular vote. But
and that's it. I mean, there's a little clip here to share with you. It is just absolutely mind-boggling. This morning I was watching as well as Condi was in this. It's continuing. I mean, it's continuing. And they're gonna put this person in. They're gonna put into power as our Secretary of State, as the person who represents the United States to the rest of the world. And the rest of the world is watching, and they're not stupid. They're gonna put into power somebody who helped this administration lie us into a war that has benefited nobody except Halliburton and has caused the deaths of thousands. Over 1,000 Americans and perhaps as many as 100,000 Iraqis. Say, well, but the Iraqis are free. Oh, yeah? I don't think so. They are still filling mass graves over there. Tragically. And I'm not indicting America for that, but I am indicting George W. Bush and Condoleezza Rice for it. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes get.
Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the edge strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Condi Rice wants her lies respected, notes the Center for American Progress. Rice refused to take responsibility for her misstatements. See, they're being nice to her, too. I'd say lies in the run-up to the war in Iraq. 9902 Rice said, quote, "We do know that Saddam is actively pursuing a nuclear weapon," end quote. On 9703, a year later, Rice said, quote, "We don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud," end quote. Something echoed by George W. Bush and others in the administration. It was one of their mantras. Later, after weapons inspector David Kay had determined Iraq's nuclear weapons programs were retired in 1991, as Scott Ritter had told them, he had been the official UN weapons inspector, been saying this all along, as Hans Blix was telling them, as Mohammed Al-Arabi was telling them, all of these folks were saying, "Hey, there is nothing there." Rice told PBS it was a case that said he was trying to reconstitute. Nobody ever said it was going to be next year. You're right. No inconsistency. She wants to be respected for her lies. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Well, I've been following the hearings, but interested, and they did have the final committee vote. It was 16-2 with Boxer and Kerry voting no.
Yeah, let me repeat, Dante. The hottest place in hell are reserved for those who, in times of great moral crisis, maintain their neutrality.
Yeah, I realize we're limited for time here, but is it just me, or do you find, maybe you and some of your listeners, find Joseph Biden irritating? I mean, the man comes up with almost as many faults with Condi Rice as Kerry and Boxer and some others, but he says, "I'm going to vote for it because the president deserves to have the people he wants in office." Well, the Senate is supposed to advise and consent, not advise and rubber stamp. You know, I mean,
yeah.
This woman is clearly a liar. And, of course, she's only doing what her boss, George Bush, tells her to do. But, see, they're very clever at this, the Republicans. They've become very clever. They did it with Clarence Thomas. They did it with Colin Powell. And, in fact, I don't know if you heard Julian Bond's comment yesterday about how Powell and Rice were basically used as front for the Bush administration. So,
yeah.
You know, they can say we're not racist, and of course, if any Democrat dares to oppose them, then they'll be accused of being racist.
Well, you know, I don't agree with Julian Bond on that. Frankly, I think that Powell was used not for his race, but for his credibility.
Well, of course.
And Condi Rice was brought in because she's a smart person and she agrees with this administration. I'm not going to go where Julian Bond did. I don't get it. I don't see it.
Well, I think being a black man, he probably understands. When he sees phony blacks put out there, I think they can see that maybe better than we white people can, you know. But anyway, that's kind of off the topic. Yeah. Clearly, though, I think Rice knows she's going to be confirmed, and that's why she's so arrogant, you know. And of course, I think there is this aspect of, you know, don't push me too far, or I'll push the race card. You know that would eventually happen, and it happened with Clarence Thomas.
Of course it happened with Clarence Thomas. He was... That was a different time, and there was a different issue. I don't frankly think that would have happened with Condi Rice. I think the issue on the table, just straight up, flat out, is the fact that this woman has been for several years now, either advising the president to do stupid things,
right,
or she has been singing the song of this administration, which, in my opinion, was put out for political purposes. This war, of course, they wanted the war from before they got into office. And,
sure.
And as Paul O'Neill said, the former Commerce Secretary of Commerce, the first week after Bush was inaugurated in 2001, they were talking about attacking Iraq. The first week.
Right.
But nonetheless, this thing, the timing of this and the strategy for this was put together by Karl Rove as part of George Bush's 2004 campaign strategy back in 2002. And it was manipulated, and the timing was exquisite. I mean, September of 2002, the timing was manipulated on this thing to flip the midterm, to influence the midterm elections, and influence 2004, because no wartime president ever goes down. And he was right. Karl Rove was right. I mean, it's right there in Bob Woodward's book. This is not rocket science. And so we have a war to get a guy reelected. All these people are dead, and Condi is the point person on it, and that's the issue, in my opinion. 29 minutes past the hour.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live? And who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy. But if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Unite Here hotel workers in Washington, D.C. have overwhelmingly approved a very good contract, won through strong solidarity and smart tactics and timing. Unite Here Local 25 Secretary Treasurer John Boardman.
Virtually every major section of the contract we sought to change, we prevailed upon.
In a big victory for workers, Unite Here won the largest wage hikes in 25 years, 100% employer-paid health insurance, and a 30% increase in pensions. Workers at other hotels have noticed, and Boardman says it's time to organize.
We're already being contacted by workers in other hotels here in Washington who want to see the union come to their property. So we're going to take this and go out and organize.
Unite Here says there are changes to almost every article of the contract designed to improve conditions in the workplace and strengthen the rights of workers. Unite Here had threatened to strike during the inauguration unless they got a good contract.
The fallout of Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels' decision to end collective bargaining for state employees has begun. The International Union of Police Association Local 1041 voted unanimously to dissolve. In addition to representing state troopers, the local also represented the state's conservation officers. Keith Gill, former president of the local, said the decision was made because the union no longer had a purpose without the right to collectively bargain. The Republican governor canceled union contracts with nearly 25,000 state workers last week.
George W. Bush is using the Social Security Administration, including Social Security Associate Commissioner Andrew Biggs, to push privatization of Social Security. Biggs was the Cato Institute's assistant director on the project on Social Security privatization. Social Security employees, represented by the National Treasury Employees Union, resent the use of the Social Security Administration to push privatization propaganda. NTEU President Colleen Kelly says her members will join workers nationwide to oppose the undermining of Social Security. Kelly says defending Social Security will be a priority for Social Security Administration workers.
We will be making this one of our legislative priorities, and we will be working with all of those in the House and the Senate to make sure that they, too, understand the issues, the impact, and what the facts are around the issue, as well as the fiction.
Henry Aaron, a Social Security analyst at the Brookings Institution, says talk of Social Security crisis is nonsense in an effort to stampede the public.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most famous cigar country in the world is making moves to snuff out smoking. Statistics show that 4 out of 10 Cubans smoke. And of the 15,000 deaths from preventable cancer in Cuba each year, 30% of those have been linked to smoking. The island will ban smoking in most public areas. President Fidel Castro, who gave up cigars years ago, says that when Cubans give cigars away, they say, smoke them or give them to someone who smokes. But the best thing to do is to give them to your enemy. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Shake it up. Shake it up.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you.
Shake it up.
Your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Margaret in Illinois on the line. Hey, Margaret, welcome to the program.
I would like to...
Margaret, you're going to have to speak up just a little bit.
Okay.
Thank you.
What about Condoleezza Rice's Chinese background?
What do you mean?
Well, isn't her husband connected with Chinese?
I don't believe that Condoleezza Rice is married.
Well, I'm sorry. It must be someone else. But I have another thing on my mind. Did you know about our armed services using depleted uranium?
Yes. Yes, extensively.
Have you done any programs on that?
I have. We've done several on it. Yeah,
I must have missed it.
This is a terrible problem, not only for the people of Iraq, where we've seen leukemia rates go up, just explode since 1991 when we first dumped enormous quantities of basically depleted nuclear waste on their country, but now our soldiers are being exposed to it as well.
And it's affecting DNA, and they showed, actually, on our Paducah TV station, a child born without a face.
Yeah, no,
showed that, and yeah. It didn't connect that their father was in the service or not, but...
Yeah, and it's a terrible thing, Margaret. Margaret, I've got to move along, I'm sorry, and also your phone there was really, really cracking up. Matt in Oklahoma on the line. Hey, Matt, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Tom, I'm one of those crazy people that really, really, really try to listen to both sides of an argument. Both positions, and I asked myself this morning, okay, if I turn on one of the right-wing wackos, how are they possibly going to defend Condoleezza Rice? And they did the same thing they normally do, that nothing thinned her lies because they're indefensible, but just to tear down Barbara Boxer for asking legitimate questions and making legitimate statements that any thinking American human being or any other human being, for that matter, would wonder themselves and want answers to when we're killing people every day.
Yeah, it's the kill a messenger strategy, and the Republican Party has been very good at it ever since, basically ever since Reagan. You know, anybody who raised any questions, go after them. I mean, look at what happened to Joe Wilson.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I keep coming back to the same question, Tom, and maybe you can help me out with this. Why the hell did we do this?
Yeah.
If you
read Bob Woodward's book, Bush at War, you find that in 2002, Karl Rove went down to Crawford, Texas during that infamous vacation and sat down with George W. Bush and said, here's your campaign strategy. This was in the summer of 2002. Your campaign strategy to help win re-election in 2004. And it was that he was going to be a strong leader in time of war. And of course, they had to have a war. And so coming out of this, you get Andrew Card coming out and saying, you know, in August, right? This was in August. In August, the reporter says to him, "Well, are we going to have a war in Iraq? And are you promoting a war in Iraq?" And he says, "You don't roll out a product in the summer."
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so they started promoting it in September and pushing this thing. And you know, just curiously, a few months before the midterm elections, and had so many members of the Senate and in the House in such a tizzy about, you know, well, should I give him the authority? He says he's not going to go to war. He says he needs the authority to help the United Nations force Saddam to let the inspectors in. Of course, Saddam was already letting the inspectors, and then Saddam never threw the inspectors out. We pulled the inspectors out both times. He pulled Ritter's team out because we wanted to bomb him, and by Clinton, and then under Bush we pulled Blix's team out. So because we were going to begin the bombing in both cases. And then they say, well, I actually heard this morning on MSNBC, I heard somebody say, well, if Saddam had only offered any evidence at all that he was dismantling his weapons of nuclear destruction or his weapons of mass destruction program, does nobody remember the fact that he turned 14,000 pages of documentation over to the United Nations and said, here is every single piece that we've got, and you are welcome to visit any part of this country. And he allowed for months the inspectors to roam free absolutely throughout the country. Blix said he was encountering no resistance. And for some reason, For some reason, the Bush administration went through and redacted about 5,000 pages of those 14,000 pages. Only 9,000 were delivered to the United Nations. And none of those really they had anybody had an opportunity to read before Bush said, hey, you guys, it's looking like you're not finding anything there. So I'm going to go bomb these guys anyway. And it's just, yeah, I can tell you why we have a war in Iraq. We have a war in Iraq because Bush thought it was going to be quick and easy to get him reelected.
I guess you're right, Tom, but can you understand that it's hard for me to fathom that somebody would kill this many people just for power?
This is a guy who killed over 130 people in the death chamber in Texas and laughed about it, made jokes about it. Carla Faye Tucker, who had converted to Christianity and become an absolute evangelical. If you want to talk about a jailhouse, you know, about a transformation, about rehabilitation, she would be the poster child for it. And she went to Bush and said, you know, to please spare her death. And Bush has this interview with Time Magazine, and he rubs his hands together, and he's talking about Carla Faye Tucker, and he goes, "Save me, Mr. Bush, or Governor Bush, save me!" And he like laughs about it, he cackles about it, you know, how making fun of the fact that he put her to death. I mean, I'm not surprised. I have to say, I am not surprised. You look back at what this guy did as governor of Texas, I am not surprised. Matt, thanks for the call. I got to move along. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Sean in Portland, Oregon, on the line. Hey, Sean, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Tom. I was listening to your conversation a few minutes ago. I wanted to know what your definition of what a proper black person is. And before you answer that, I just want to know if it's along the lines of someone that, you know, listens to gangster rap and hangs out in the inner city sucking on a 40, slanging drugs. Because if that's the case, I think you guys are just as bigoted as the people that you're trying to accuse of being bigots.
What are you talking about, Sean?
You guys are crazy, man. I mean, just
what are you talking about?
Condoleezza Rice, just because people like Clarence Thomas, Condoleezza Rice, and Colin Powell don't throw the NCAA or whatever, party line or whatever the hard left is putting out there. You guys chastise them and you call them Uncle Toms and you go to
Sean, but when Rick from Grand Rapids was repeating what Julian Bond said a little earlier, I said, I don't think this has anything to do with race. I said, I think that Colin Powell was hired because of his credibility, and I think Condi Rice was hired because she was smart and she agreed with George W. Bush. That's what I said. Were you not listening, Sean?
Yeah, you know what? You're a wacko. You're a wacko, and you're just as bigoted as your colleagues in your party, and that's why you guys
Sean, give me some evidence of that, please.
That's why you guys
Sean, just one piece of evidence.
That's why you guys aren't in power.
Just one piece of
evidence. You guys are bigots. Yeah, I'll give you a big, I'll give you a shining example.
Okay.
Look at the Great Society programs of LBJ, you know, the projects, man, come on.
You think that trying to help people in poverty is racism, Sean?
Right. You try to
Sean, you think that...
How would you like to meet me in a fair fight, Mr. Sport? All things being equal, man to man, Marquis of Queensbury rules. Huh? That's different, eh? Yeah, that's something else again. Yeah, you don't like that, do you, sportsman? No. Yeah, you don't like it.
Okay, Sean, are you done trying to filibuster me?
Hey, no, I'm, you know what, man?
You're going to go on and on and on. Oh, you guys are losers. Oh, you guys are, you know. Come on, Sean, are you really trying to say that you believe that LBJ was trying to help poor people? And by the way, the majority of the people who were and I'm potting you down, Sean, because you're not letting me finish a sentence, and you're not Sean Hannity, and neither am I, and neither one of us are going to play that silly game. I let you finish your sentences. You're going to let me. Do you really think that LBJ was racist in trying to help lift people out of poverty in the United States? A program, by the way, number one, which worked and did reduce poverty dramatically in the United States, and number two, which helped far more white people than black people. Sean, what do you think?
You know what? I'm not questioning his intentions. You know, I'm sure he had the noblest of intentions when he set those programs up. However, you look at the end result and the people that came after. I grew up in the projects, and I'm a white person, okay? And let me tell you something there, boss. It didn't help. You know, issuing out people's things to move on.
Sean, you're not going to get a lot of disagreement from me.
If I would have listened to what...
Okay, Sean, you're not going to get a lot of disagreement from me. that the way that the poverty programs were implemented in their entirety wasn't the best way. I mean, there's a lot of fine tuning, a lot of improvement that needs to be done. I think that people need to own the property that they're in, not just be parked in it, for example, as a starting point. And there have been a lot of changes made to it since then. But it was a start, wasn't it, Sean?
Yeah, but you know what? You can't continue it, Tom. And you know the way
we're not. We're not
African Americans. It's just
Sean, you're breaking up.
It's funny.
Sean, you're breaking up. I'm sorry. I am really and truly not cutting you off, Sean. You are gone. I mean, yourself. Please, if you disagree with me, call. But here, let's get back to the issue, because as I said, I don't think this has anything whatsoever to do with race. And, you know, no matter how many cons want to call me up and say, oh, you're picking on Condi Rice because she's black. No, I'm not. And it's got nothing to do with that. It's you have to wonder about folks who see race as the issue all the time when, this has nothing to do with it. Here's the real issue. Colin Powell, 29 July 2001. I'm sorry, Condi Rice, 29 July 2001. She's on CNN Late Edition with Wolf Blitzer. Okay. Very straightforward. Guest host John King asks her about Iraq and the no-fly zone. And she says, the president has made very clear that he considers Saddam Hussein to be a threat to his neighbors, a threat to security in the region, and in fact, a threat to international security more broadly. Then King asks her about the sanctions in Iraq, and she replies, but in terms of Saddam being there, let's remember that his country is divided in effect. He does not control the northern part of his country. We are able to keep arms from him. His military forces have not been rebuilt. Condi Rice. Now, that was, you know, a year before Karl Rove came down to Crawford, Texas, and said, Mr. President, we have your campaign strategy. Go back and look at what Colin Powell said. And this, of course, because he was Secretary of State, now Condi Rice is going to be Secretary of State. No, Sean, it has nothing to do with race. Colin Powell, on the 24th of February in 2001, he was in Cairo, Egypt. He was answering questions about Iraq. He says, we had a good discussion, the foreign minister. By the way, thanks to Pacecop in our chat room for pointing this out to me. We have some just brilliant folks in our chat room. We had a good discussion, the foreign minister and I, president and I, had a good discussion about the nature of the sanctions. The fact that the sanctions exist, not for the purpose of hurting the Iraqi people, but for the purpose of keeping in check Saddam Hussein's ambitions. And then he goes on to say, he being Saddam Hussein, he has not developed any significant capability with respect to weapons of mass destruction. He is unable to project conventional power against his neighbors. So in effect, our policies, this being the no-fly zones, have strengthened, and the sanctions have strengthened the security of the neighbors of Iraq. Colin Powell, the former Secretary of State. Well, he changed his tune quickly, and now we've got Condi Rice, you know, singing a different song also. Her having said, let's remember that his country is divided. In effect, he does not control the northern part of his country. We are able to keep arms from him. His military force has not been rebuilt. But nonetheless, Condi Rice says the administration's actions after the 2001 9/11 terror attacks, including the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, were, quote, difficult and necessary and right. Yeah, difficult. Yes, difficult. That's something that the families of those who have died definitely know about. Very difficult. This from the Center for American Progress. Once again, Rice tried to, again, exaggerated the progress of programs to train Iraqi soldiers. Isn't it nice how diplomatic folks use nice language? I appreciate that. Exaggerated, transgressed the truth, refused to take responsibility. Misstatements, that's a nice one. I'd say lies. As recently as last September, Rice and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld promised there would be 145,000 Iraqis, quote, sufficiently trained and equipped by the time of the elections. Yesterday, she said the number was, quote, somewhere around 120,000, end quote. And Joe Biden, who had just come back from Iraq, says, quote, I think you'll find if you speak to the folks on the ground, they don't think there's more than 4,000 actually trained Iraqi forces. According to official figures released last week, about 53,000 police officers, 40,000 National Guard members, and 4,000 soldiers are trained and on hand. But mass defections, this according to this report, this official report, mass defections of Iraqi troops are still frequent, with some Guard brigades recording losses of up to 50% of their personnel. It's just, on and on it goes. And then what about Iran? Is Iran our next target? You know, what's going on with this? John Kerry asks her, what about Iran? She replies, it's inaccurate. What's inaccurate? This exchange was repeated a few times. Finally, Rice said that hitting Iran with airstrikes was not U.S. policy. Kerry let it go. But it's worth pointing out that Hirsch didn't claim it was policy, only that the top civilians in the Pentagon were pushing for it to be policy, for it to become policy. Jason in Rochester, New York's on the line. Hey, Jason, what's on your mind?
One thing that most people, for some reason, gloss over is that Dick Cheney was on Meet the Press, and I think it was either September 18th or 16th, 2001, a few days after September 11th. They were just talking about Saddam Hussein as a threat, and Dick Cheney described him as bottled up.
Yeah, in a box, he said. Yeah. We've got him in a box.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cheney had said it, Rice had said it, Rumsfeld said it. I mean, I'm not sure that Rumsfeld said it. Colin Powell had said it. All of these guys. And it's because it was the truth. It wasn't until Karl Rove
got... Cheney said it after September 11th.
There you go. Well, it wasn't until Karl Rove got in the act that things changed. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio.
In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxon Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Must be the season of the witch. No, that's the name of the song. Badly timed bumper music. I wouldn't call Condi names like that. I'm just not going to go there. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And let's see, Spike in Easton, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Spike, what's up?
Hey, greetings from frozen Pennsylvania.
Yeah, well, greetings from frozen Vermont here.
So. yesterday I was listening to you, and you had kind of made a quick comment, and no one really ever asked me about it, about that they've at least one person, you were very vague about the number of people. I even mentioned on the message board about there's at least a alleged liberal talk radio host who takes money from the Democratic Party, kind of like how Armstrong Williams was taking it from the Bush administration.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could possibly elaborate more on that, because I know Ed Schultz has been really on the defensive lately on the air, saying, well, I don't take taxpayer dollars.
Well, I don't think, I may be wrong, but I don't think Ed has taken any money from the Democratic Party either. I think he took money from investors who are, many of whom are Democrats, and I salute that. I have to say, you know, I salute that. I think that's fine. That's where his, you know. No, I don't have any inside information. I don't have any, you know. So no, there's no secrets for me to tell that I know of.
Okay. Right? Like,
what I was doing was asserting my independence, not asserting others' dependence.
Okay. And also out of curiosity, a lot of talk lately is starting to come up that the whole reason we're hearing about Social Security is a smokescreen for Iran.
Yeah.
And even the American conservative has kind of mentioned that more or less the reason they're putting Condi Rice in is that they can march right into Tehran easier. I was wondering if you could comment on that also.
Well, no, I think that the Social Security program, the rolling back of Social Security is the absolute logical consequence of the conservative worldview, which is that there should be, that the government should play no role in helping folks out, that all charity should be done locally and or should be done by private institutions. And you know, it's a worldview that's coherent and may have some legitimacy. I disagree with it strongly, but there it is. And so, you know, these guys have been against Social Security ever since Franklin Roosevelt rammed it through Congress. I mean, you know, without a single Republican vote. I mean, they were all fighting the thing. So it's Ronald Reagan tried to take a whack at it. It cost him politically. And now George W. Bush is doing it. He's paying off his campaign donors, the Wall Street, these folks. Number one, the banking industries. They're going to make out like bandits, not as if they haven't already, with other things like the reform of bankruptcy laws. But also it's consistent with their philosophy, with their worldview. So I don't think that it's a smokescreen, frankly. I think that they have multiple agendas. Just, straightforward. It's the Tom Hartman program where reason is our lifestyle choice.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, "To people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times." Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Unite Here hotel workers in Washington, D.C. have overwhelmingly approved a very good contract, won through strong solidarity and smart tactics and timing. Unite Here Local 25 Secretary Treasurer John Boardman.
Virtually every major section of the contract we sought to change, we prevailed upon.
In a big victory for workers, Unite Here won the largest wage hikes in 25 years, 100% employer-paid health insurance, and a 30% increase in pensions. Workers at other hotels have noticed, and Boardman says it's time to organize.
We're already being contacted by workers in other hotels here in Washington who want to see the union come to their property. So we're going to take this and go out and organize.
Unite Here says there are changes to almost every article of the contract designed to improve conditions in the workplace and strengthen the rights of workers. Unite Here had threatened to strike during the inauguration unless they got a good contract.
The fallout of Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels' decision to end collective bargaining for state employees has begun. The International Union of Police Association Local 1041 voted unanimously to dissolve. In addition to representing state troopers, the local also represented the state's conservation officers. Keith Gill, former president of the local, said the decision was made because the union no longer had a purpose without the right to collectively bargain. The Republican governor canceled union contracts with nearly 25,000 state workers last week.
George W. Bush is using the Social Security Administration, including Social Security Associate Commissioner Andrew Biggs, to push privatization of Social Security. Biggs was the Cato Institute's assistant director on the project on Social Security privatization. Social Security employees, represented by the National Treasury Employees Union, resent the use of the Social Security Administration to push privatization propaganda. NTEU President Colleen Kelly says her members will join workers nationwide to oppose the undermining of Social Security. Kelly says defending Social Security will be a priority for Social Security Administration workers.
We will be making this one of our legislative priorities, and we will be working with all of those in the House and the Senate to make sure that they, too, understand the issues, the impact, and what the facts are around this issue, as well as the fiction.
Henry Aaron, a Social Security analyst at the Brookings Institution, says talk of Social Security crisis is nonsense in an effort to stampede the public.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most famous cigar country in the world is making moves to snuff out smoking. Statistics show that 4 out of 10 Cubans smoke. And of the 15,000 deaths from preventable cancer in Cuba each year, 30% of those have been linked to smoking. The island will ban smoking in most public areas. President Fidel Castro, who gave up cigars years ago, says that when Cubans give cigars away, they say, smoke them or give them to someone who smokes. But the best thing to do is to give them to your enemy. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
In the wild and woolly world of unbridled commerce, you'll often encounter disgusting life forms that can only be described as sleaze. For example, take the roving band of companies that profit by essentially bilking vulnerable military veterans of their pensions. These financial corporations appeal to vets who face some personal crisis and need quick cash. No problemo, say the financial agents. Just sign over your military pension payments to us for a while and we'll advance you some cash. Only later do these desperate veterans realize that they've been robbed. To get, say, $20,000, they give up $60,000 or more in monthly pension payments, amounting to as high as 75% interest. These schemes are illegal, for the law says that future military pensions cannot be signed away by a retiree. Incredibly, though, the Pentagon sides not with our soldiers, but with the profiteering companies that prey on them, even handling the paperwork to divert the retirees' pay to the corporation. Pentagon officials twist the language of the law, declaring that these are not assignments of retiree pay, which would be illegal, but merely the, quote, collateral for loans taken by retirees. The companies twist the language further, denying that these are even loans. Rather, they say that these deals are straightforward commercial transactions. We are just purchasing a stream of payments, one lawyer said coldly. Even colder, whenever veterans balk at paying the usurious ripoff, company lawyers sue them, usually in courts far away from where the vets live. Financially strapped retirees cannot afford to challenge these companies, so they are losing the cases by default and often having to file for personal bankruptcy. This is Jim Hightower saying, what's bankrupt here is a system that's robbing veterans. Where's Bush? Where's Rumsfeld? Where's Congress? To help battle this outrage, call the National Consumer Law Center, 202-452-6252.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, he's at it again. Surprise, surprise. George W. and out there putting the foxes in charge of the hen houses. It's like a repetitive mantra in this administration. You know, Ann Veneman, who from the Cattlemen's Association, put her in charge of the Department of Agriculture that oversees the cattlemen. And here we have Sam Bodman, who's going to be Secretary of Energy. He's one of the five, as when he was CEO of a company, the Cabot Corporation, that company was one of the five worst polluters in the nation. And then we had, what's his name? Where did it go? Andrew Biggs. There it is. Andrew Biggs, the Associate Commissioner, Retirement Policy at the Social Security Administration. The guy who's in charge of your retirement and mine. Yep. The Associate Commissioner for Retirement Policy at the Social Security Administration. He was a former Assistant Director at the Cato Institute's Product on Social Security privatization. And now, Mike Leavitt. George Bush says Mike Leavitt should be the head of the Department of Health and Human Services. However, he has, shall we say, to politely quote the Center for American Progress, he has strong family ties to this 27th largest insurance broker in the United States, Leavitt Group Enterprises. Gee, what a surprise. We're going to put a guy from the insurance industry in charge of Health and Human Services, which is the largest federal agency that interfaces with the insurance industry through Medicare primarily. What a surprise. I am shocked. I am just astounded. Welcome back, by the way, to the Tom Hartman program. That's me, Tom Hartman, here with you, broadcasting on stations all across the United States, Sirius Satellite, RadioPower.org, Cable Radio Network, Archives of White Rose Society, and at TomHartman.com, our chat room, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop in. Mike Leavitt, the latest in the lineup, as it were. His family operates in areas like medical malpractice insurance that he has signaled will be important parts of his agenda. Yeah, because his family owns insurance companies that make money on medical malpractice. Oh, this is mind-boggling. Leavitt used to serve as chief operating officer, COO, and retains a substantial financial interest in the family insurance firm, this Leavitt Group Enterprises. It's now run by his brother, Dane, staffed by several members of his family. He also has substantial financial interests in other companies directly affected by decisions that he would be making as head of HHS, such as Johnson & Johnson and Merck, the maker of Vioxx. They're at it again. They are just absolutely at it again. What can you say? And the same thing with Social Security. Here now, Bernie Sanders used the L word today. I used it in the last hour with regard to Condi Rice. I guess it's considered unseemly to say that somebody's a liar. I don't know why. I mean, if somebody tells a lie, shouldn't you say that they're a liar? It doesn't happen in the Senate, by and large. Occasionally, somebody in the House will do it, though, and Bernie Sanders has done it. Headline. This is a headline in the Gannett-owned newspaper, part of a national chain, the Burlington Free Press. Sanders, : Bush, quote, lying, end quote, about Social Security. Here's the article by Sean Turner of the Burlington Free Press. President Bush's plan to privatize Social Security would result in a, quote, disaster, end quote. For those who rely on the program for income, Representative Bernie Sanders, independent from Vermont, said Tuesday. Bush has said his plan, which would place a portion of payroll taxes into private investment accounts, is necessary because otherwise the program will be, quote, flat bust bankrupt, end quote, by the time those now in their 20s reach retirement. Flanked by members of groups representing the elderly, disabled, and women, Sanders said that claim is overblown and the president is, quote, lying, end quote, about the state of the Social Security system. Sanders said the president has got to stop creating panic among younger people. He referenced a congressional budget office report that found that Social Security will continue providing complete benefits for the next 47 years. And after that, said Sanders, there'll be enough funding available to pay out 80% of promised benefits, and with minor adjustments, 100% of benefits. But it's a boring program. I mean, they've never failed to pay a check. It's always just worked. I mean, it's always just been right there. It's just been fine. They've never failed to pay a check. You know, let's turn it over to those great guys at Wall Street. They know how to help you out and take a piece of the action. See, we already have private retirement accounts that are tax deferred. They're called 401ks and IRAs and SEPs. It's interesting that no conservatives have come out and pointed out this perhaps uncomfortable truth for conservatives. And that is that George W. Bush is actually proposing compulsory retirement programs. What he is saying, because Social Security is really an insurance program. And it's not just a retirement program. About a third of all the people who are drawing Social Security benefits are not retired workers. 16% of them are disabled. And about an equivalent percentage of them are the spouses or children of people who have died or become fully disabled. So it's an insurance program. And, you know, everybody doesn't use it equally. Just, I mean, what, should I go to my car insurance company and say, hey, I've been paying car insurance for 15 years. I've never had an accident. Give me back my money. I'm sorry, that's not how insurance works. Insurance is there to help folks when they're out, when they're in trouble. But so what George W. Bush is proposing is a compulsory, see, you don't pay your taxes, they come for you. A compulsory retirement program. We're going to force you to save $1 million. Except it may or may not be, depending on how Wall Street goes and who gets their hands on it, and, you know, whether or not you get scammed. And anyway, it's absolutely remarkable. This the propaganda is just unrelenting. USA Today, January 14th column, Media Matters for America has outed these folks. USA Today, who owns the same paper that that Bernie Sanders' quote was in, owned by Gannett also. Stefani D. Carter, formerly of the Heritage Foundation, the Harvard Law School, and the Kennedy School of Government, made false claims, says Media Matters for America, to argue that Social Security faces an imminent threat. Here's what he said, quote, in about 13 years, Social Security will begin to pay out more in benefits than it receives in taxes. At that point, the program will be forced to cut benefits or increase taxes, either of which will negatively affect minorities and the poor. By 2032, only a few years before I retire, Social Security will be taking in only enough money to pay 70% of promised benefits. Two falsehoods. Maybe I just shouldn't say lie anymore. Two falsehoods in that. I'll start being reasonable. The first, he says, in 13 years, Social Security will begin to pay out more in benefits than it receives in taxes. First of all, there's a lot of debate about when that's going to be. But the point, he says, at that point, the program will be forced to cut benefits or increase taxes. No, sorry. What happened, Stefani, was that 20 years ago or so, demographers at the Social Security Administration saw this bulge coming called the boomer generation and said, you know, we got to plan for this. We have to prepare for this. Because by and large, Social Security had not been saving money through most of its years. Social Security had been operating off money that came into it. And it will again in, say, 60 or 70 years from now, because the bulge will be gone. But there's this huge bulge of people as a consequence of, you know, our forces returning from World War II. The end of World War II, and you got the baby boom generation. So they got together and they said, you know, we've got to set aside enough money that we can pay benefits to these folks. And they did. They did. You know, changes were made during the Reagan administration and as I recall, during the Clinton administration, to actually pull in more money into Social Security than it was using so that it could buy treasury bills, treasury bonds, which pay interest, and save that money to pay out, you know, for that time when the amount of money coming in is going to be less than the amount of money going out. So we've already done that. We've taken care of that. The, quote, problem, end quote, isn't going to come until 2042 or 2052, depending on which number, you know, whether you want to look at the Congressional Budget Office, which says 2052, or the Social Security actuaries, who say 2042. At that point, Social Security will only have enough income to pay 80% of benefits. And you want to solve that problem, you simply, right now, Social Security is capped at $80,000 a year. In other words, on the first $80,000 of income that you make, you pay into Social Security. If you make $100,000, you make $200,000, you make $300,000, you make $1 million, you make $5 million, all that money over $80,000, you don't pay any tax on into the Social Security retirement. Why not? Well, to shelter the rich from being taxed. I mean, that's the simple answer. It was the only way that Roosevelt could get this thing passed. But if you just took that cap off and said, okay, everybody pays this percentage of their income in Social Security tax, no matter how much money they make, gee, what a novel idea. It's Steve Forbes's flat tax, friends. You would solve the problem of Social Security, the problem. It's not a crisis. It won't even be a problem for another 30 years or another 40 years, maybe even another 50 years. And even then, it may not be a problem because a lot is going to depend on how the economy does. If the economy picks up, Social Security will solve its own problem because payrolls will go up, taxes will go up. You know, it's a fixed percentage, but the amount of revenue that comes in will go up. So how they can get off on this? This is a problem. It's terrible. And then Stephanie Carter in USA Today says, minorities get the least because they generally have a lower average life expectancy than whites. Age is 72 for blacks, 78 for whites. They are being cheated out of years of payout. The poor are hurt disproportionately, too. Come on. Stephanie is claiming that her uncle, who died young, didn't get Social Security benefits. But the reality is that there are survivor and disability benefits. If her uncle, Media Matters points out, who died when he was 58, had become disabled, he would have received disability benefits from Social Security. In addition, his wife and children, if he had them, would have been entitled to Social Security survivor benefits. So this is, and yet this propaganda is published in USA Today. USA Today, publishing propaganda from the Heritage Foundation, or a person formerly associated with the Heritage Foundation, Stephanie D. Carter. Come on, it's time to wake up, friends. Notice what's real. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
ongoing
get.
Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where the truth is non-negotiable. Speaking of the truth, let's find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria.
Hey.
What's up?
Well, you know, we've got this big radio row going on in the Holiday Inn on New Jersey Avenue, closest hotel to the Capitol. We've got all these talk show hosts and all these guests, because most of the talk show hosts are fairly conservative. A lot of the guests are, because it's pretty much a Republican inauguration. But I got to tell you that it's been interesting to me how many of the hosts, at least, and some of the real conservatives, are concerned at the cost of this thing and are also concerned that
of which
is
thing?
Paying for a good chunk of it.
The cost of the inaugural.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's
they're
not
embarrassed
sort of
by
uniform.
Is that what you mean, that they're embarrassed by it?
They're embarrassed by it. They don't think that D.C. should be paying it. They don't necessarily even think that this is the time to be doing this kind of lavish inauguration. So it's interesting, because sometimes you get the impression that everybody feels the same way on this, on so-called both sides of the aisle, and it's not the case.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Interesting. And there are a lot of principled conservatives also who are very concerned about the costs of the Medicare giveaway to the drug companies, about the privatization of Social Security and this whole all the various, and not to mention the Iraq War. I mean, all the various con jobs that George W. Bush has tried to foist upon us. It's surprising.
Yeah, and it was interesting. I was speaking with Congressman Bob Ney this morning of Ohio. And he was saying, a very conservative gentleman, decent guy, he was saying that he does not think Social Security is going anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be very surprised, frankly, if Bush can get anything through Congress on this thing. Through the Senate, anyway. He'll get it through the House, but he won't make it through the Senate. Speaking of the Senate this morning, the hearing, 16-2, was the vote in favor of Condi Rice, with John Kerry and Barbara Boxer voting against her for confirmation, to send it out to the Senate at large. Any thoughts on that, or what's the buzz on that?
Well, among the more conservative hosts here, or at least the more Republican hosts, the sense is, Barbara Boxer behaved appallingly, and basically because she didn't bow down like everybody else. But there is a little bit of cynicism about John Kerry voting no. Kind of that, well, if you hadn't run for president and then had some of your votes come back to bite you, you probably would have voted to confirm, and so are you positioning yourself for another run? So he has a bit of a credibility problem, I think, in terms of his positions now.
Yeah, he needs to, in my opinion, he needs to just get off this whole thing of he might run again in 4 years, and just say he's not going to and walk away from that.
Yeah, nobody wants him to run.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to do him any good. Any other news there from Washington?
Well, the snow is dreadful, and of course Washington doesn't cope very well if it rains a bit. So here we've got Stinger missiles going on, most unbelievable security you've ever seen, and now they've got snow as well. And so I'm just going to be fascinated to see how they could even pull this thing off.
Yeah, and then protesters are going to be showing up tomorrow.
Protests are going to be showing up, and they're going to be cold and snowy, and they don't necessarily even know where the route is. And, of course, if you are an official, this is what's so ludicrous, if you are an official protester, you're basically being kept out of the action. But if you're a smart protester and say that you're a fan of the president, of course, you can get a first row seat.
Yeah, and but then if you try and protest, you might get shot.
Well, that's the downside.
I mean, they're telling the performers not even to look at George Bush as they walk by him. No rapid movements, right? There will be guns trained on you at all times. But what does that say to the rest of us? I mean,
nothing good.
Yeah, this is absolutely
no. It's a very very bizarre time in this city. It's the capital of the free world, and it doesn't really feel like it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Victoria Jones, thank you so much for the report from Washington, D.C. Always good to hear from you and from Ellen with Talk Radio News Service. And stay warm there, will you?
Take good care of yourself. We sure will.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Talk to you later, Victoria. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Program where we run the rings around the right wing. Say that three times fast every single day. And again today. And again tomorrow. We'll be right back.
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away.
And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Unite Here hotel workers in Washington, D.C. have overwhelmingly approved a very good contract, won through strong solidarity and smart tactics and timing. Unite Here Local 25 Secretary Treasurer John Boardman.
Virtually every major section of the contract we sought to change, we prevailed upon.
In a big victory for workers, Unite Here won the largest wage hikes in 25 years, 100% employer-paid health insurance, and a 30% increase in pensions. Workers at other hotels have noticed, and Boardman says it's time to organize.
We're already being contacted by workers in other hotels here in Washington who want to see the union come to their property. So we're going to take this and go out and organize.
Unite Here says there are changes to almost every article of the contract designed to improve conditions in the workplace and strengthen the rights of workers. Unite Here had threatened to strike during the inauguration unless they got a good contract.
The fallout of Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels' decision to end collective bargaining for state employees has begun. The International Union of Police Association Local 1041 voted unanimously to dissolve. In addition to representing state troopers, the local also represented the state's conservation officers. Keith Gill, former president of the local, said the decision was made because the union no longer had a purpose without the right to collectively bargain. The Republican governor canceled union contracts with nearly 25,000 state workers last week.
George W. Bush is using the Social Security Administration, including Social Security Associate Commissioner Andrew Biggs, to push privatization of Social Security. Biggs was the Cato Institute's assistant director on the project on Social Security privatization. Social Security employees, represented by the National Treasury Employees Union, resent the use of the Social Security Administration to push privatization propaganda. NTEU President Colleen Kelly says her members will join workers nationwide to oppose the undermining of Social Security. Kelly says defending Social Security will be a priority for Social Security Administration workers.
We will be making this one of our legislative priorities, and we will be working with all of those in the House and the Senate to make sure that they, too, understand the issues, the impact, and what the facts are around this issue, as well as the fiction.
Henry Aaron, a Social Security analyst at the Brookings Institution, says talk of Social Security crisis is nonsense in an effort to stampede the public.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most famous cigar country in the world is making moves to snuff out smoking. Statistics show that 4 out of 10 Cubans smoke. And of the 15,000 deaths from preventable cancer in Cuba each year, 30% of those have been linked to smoking. The island will ban smoking in most public areas. President Fidel Castro, who gave up cigars years ago, says that when Cubans give cigars away, they say, smoke them or give them to someone who smokes. but the best thing to do is to give them to your enemy. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Over the mountain, down in the valley, lives a former talk show host. Everybody knows his name.
Uh-oh.
He said there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
It was a myth of fingerprints.
Yeah.
I've seen them all, and man, they're all the same.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and we will be going to the phones in just a moment. First, a conservative alert. A conservative alert. This from rightmarch.com. Remember when the radical leftists marched in New York City against the GOP convention to protest against President Bush and conservative values? RightMarch.com got together with other conservative organizations, secured stations along their Right March route and outside of their rallies, and showed up in the streets to protest the protesters. And we stole their thunder, snagging 25% of the media coverage so the silent majority couldn't see that they were not alone. Well, guess what? They're back! And we're going to be right there at the presidential inauguration to confront their lies with the truth. We need your help to do it, says RightMarch.com. If you could be in Washington, D.C. this Thursday, keep reading below for details on where to meet for the big counter-protest and demonstrations. And if you can't be there, we still need your help with our costs for this event. Can you help out today with a donation of $1,000? $500? $250? $150? Even $25? The leftists will do their best to ruin the president's day, but by conservatives coming out in large numbers to these permitted demonstration areas, we can deny them ground from which to operate from. Yes, ground from which to operate from. RightMarch.com, our conservative alert for the day. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Tim in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom.
What's up?
As a resident of Illinois and a constituent of Barack Obama, I'm paying very close attention to his actions. I pay a little bit of attention to what he says, but very much more so to his actions.
Yeah, is he
now, my comments today about Barack Obama are in context of Martin Luther King, who said the day before he was assassinated, talking to the sanitation workers in Memphis, "You have to stand up with your spine straight against your oppressor, because a man can't ride your back in that position."
There you go.
Now, my point is, Barack Obama is not standing up with his spine straight. He's just complaining about his oppressor without taking action.
Well, I don't think
and
we know.
It's just gutless, plain and simple.
Wait a second here, Tim. He's your senator, not mine, so I
right.
guess you have more right to complain about him than I do. But the last I looked, Barack Obama he's not in the Senate yet. I mean, they're swearing these guys in now, or they did what? It was last week, or is it next week?
No, he's been in since the 3rd.
Okay,
now,
so it was
January
last week.
On January 6th, he's 0 for 2 in my book. On January 6th, he certified the felony fraud vote results in Ohio. Today, he supported Condoleezza Rice, someone who sold the war to America with lies.
Oh, interesting. Is he on the committee?
Absolutely.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
On both occasions, lots of wonderful rhetoric, lots of complaining, but no follow-through on principle.
So we've got another get-along, go-along Democrat, basically.
No question about it. I'll tell you what, I don't care what any of these people say in Congress. It's what they do.
Yeah.
How many years have we listened to these people, and these Democratic senators, let's be straight out with it, flapping their gums about all these wonderful principled thoughts, and then they don't follow through?
Yeah. Yeah, this is the point. You know, it's interesting. David Brooks had a piece in the New York Times a couple of days ago in which he said that in the Democratic Party there were basically one group of Democrats, I forget what he categorized them, and then the second group of Democrats who he said were Gingrich followers. And what he meant by that was they believe that the Democrats in Congress should, as Gingrich did with the Republicans in the House, follow a scorched earth policy, that they should just absolutely deny George Bush anything. You know, Gingrich got... there was not one single Republican vote in favor of Bill Clinton's economic package that ultimately, you know, balanced the budget and brought prosperity to America. Not one single Republican vote, because Gingrich was so effective at getting discipline, you know, in the ranks.
That's right. They have solidarity.
Yeah, exactly.
They have what workers should have.
And David Brooks, of course, he's a conservative, so he's giving this advice to Democrats. He's saying, don't do what Newt did. Please don't do what Newt did, because it wouldn't be good for the Democratic Party. And I'm like, oh, jeez. What's such a shame.
Well,
is that there are so many Democrats.
During the Democratic convention, Obama was the keynote speaker, and everyone's talking about how, ooh, we've got a new shining star.
Yeah.
So far, sell out.
Yeah, it's a tragedy. Tim, thanks for sharing that with us.
Okay,
I appreciate
Tom.
It. Good to hear from you. It's bad news, bad news. And I should have noticed that. I must have half attention here today. Lynn in Eureka, California is on the line. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, by the way. Hey, Lynn, what's up?
I've got to agree with the last caller. I've been watching Obama, too, and I had pretty much the same feelings that he had, that he's just not sticking up for us.
Yeah.
But what I called about was you were talking about the inauguration, and I have been noticing that the Bush administration really loves to put on a military show. I mean, Bush dresses in uniforms. He's even got his own little commander-in-chief uniform made and wears that, and he parades this military out now today or tomorrow.
Yeah.
This reminds me of World War II Germany.
Yeah, I was going to say these are the signs of a fascistic leaning regime. The 14 symptoms of fascism I don't have in front of me and I don't remember them all, but certainly an obsession with the military is one of them. And that's certainly what we've seen. You wonder to what extent it's some sort of bizarre compensation for his absolute and utter failures when he was in the military, you know, not showing up for duty, copping out when they started doing drug tests, things like that.
Yeah, it seems incongruent.
But congruency has never been Bush's strong point, although even supposedly stand-up moderators like, you know, Chris Matthews, who, frankly, I have to say, by and large, I respect, are repeating this line that, you know, it doesn't matter what you think about George Bush, you know where he stands. Well, I'm sorry, he's flip-flopped all over the place in the last 4 years.
Well, it also matters where he stands if he's consistent. You disagree,
yeah.
You know. I've got to thank you again, Tom, for something else. I know where I stand in my heart, but. You're helping me put voice to it. I'm kind of inarticulate usually, and you help me phrase things better to present them to other people.
Well, thank you, Lynn.
Yeah, okay.
I appreciate that. I'm glad to know that, and thank you for the call. It's good to hear from
Bye.
You. It's very kind of you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to call in. Lemke in Carbondale, Illinois, listening, I would guess, on WINI.
You got that right.
Hey, Lemke, what's up?
Well, I want to thank you first for your program. And I wonder, do you really know what a con artist is?
Well, I've met a few in my life, so
well,
I
get a picture of Rice in front of you, man. Boy, she's got the right name.
Yeah.
Just call her con artist Rice.
Well, yeah, but here's why, you know, after the first hour when I kept using the word, the L word, the liar word, and I'm over the break, I was thinking about this and discussing it with myself, thinking, you know, name calling really is not a useful thing. And liar used to be, maybe didn't used to be, I don't know. You could use it as a straight up identifier, as an adjective. Or it could be just, you know, name calling. And I really don't mean it as name calling. I mean, she really does tell lies. Con man, I think we're wandering into the area, Lemke, of name calling. I think it would be better to simply point out the fact that she has not told the truth over and over and over again and continues to try and conflate, for example, 9/11 and Saddam Hussein to create and maintain confusion on the part of the American electorate.
Yeah, but she took the job with a guy that didn't have the intelligence to do it right, so he got a good educated person to take his to do it for him.
Well, that's why he hired her, as I said
Certainly.
Earlier. I mean, she's a very, very bright woman. She was the
yeah.
provost at Stanford. She's brilliant. And it's tragic to see that kind of intellect being used in this kind of way. I mean, it really truly is tragic.
For a guy like Bush.
Yeah. Lemke, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you, and I'm pleased that you're listening there in Central Illinois. I do appreciate it. Lots of interesting. Let me go to.
Hello, friends. This is the Right Reverend Tom Hartman of the Church of the Gooey Death Spiritual Brownie Point and Godstamp Redemption Center, reading to you today from Psalm 2004. Bush is my shepherd, I shall not be in want. He maketh me lie down on park benches. He leadeth me beside the still factories. He restoreth my doubt in the Republican Party. He leadeth me into the paths of unemployment for his cronies' sake. Yea, though no weapons of mass destruction have been found, he maketh me continue to fear evil. His tax cuts for the rich and his deficit spending discomfort me. He anointeth me with never-ending debt. Verily, my days of savings and assets are kaput. Surely poverty and hard living shall follow me all the days of his administration, and my jobless child shall dwell in my basement forever.
Yes. Thanks to Roberta for passing that along to us. So back to the news. This, speaking of missionaries, I actually want to get into a serious topic around this. Speaking of missionaries, here we have this situation where in Samantabhati, Thailand, if there's Tamil there, it must be Sri Lanka. Samantabhati, rage and fury, this from an ANI story, rage and fury has gripped the tsunami-hit tiny Hindu village. Oh, it's in India. In India's southern Tamil Nadu, after a group of Christian missionaries allegedly refused them aid for not agreeing to follow their religion. Samantabhati, near the temple town of Madurai, faced near devastation on the December 26th tidal wave when it was wiped clean of homes and lives. Most of the 200 people here are homeless or displaced, battling to rebuild lives and locate lost family members, besides facing risks of epidemic disease and trauma. Jubilant at seeing the relief trucks loaded with food, clothes, and the much-needed medicine, the villagers, many of whom have not had a square meal in days, were shocked when the nuns asked them to convert before distributing the food and water. Heated arguments broke out as the locals forcibly tried to stop the relief trucks from leaving. The missionaries, who rushed into their cars on seeing television reporters and cameras refusing to comment on the incident, managed to leave the village, disappointed and shocked into disbelief. The hapless villagers still are awaiting aid. Which brings us to, I want to talk about our book, my BuzzFlash book of the month. And we'll get to that perhaps in the next hour. And also the fact that now the payoff is happening. Just as these poor villagers, they didn't get their food because they didn't want to convert to Christianity. Here we have, speaking of converting to Christianity, George W. Bush has put over $1 billion into his faith-based initiatives program. Now, there have been some folks in Congress who have been saying, where did this money go? And nobody's sure. The Republicans are like, they're doing this two-step. They're saying, well, we're not going to tell you, basically. It's just the bottom line. Administration record keeping, this is from an article in the Los Angeles Times, has made it difficult to track where the faith-based money has gone. But over $1 billion was distributed in 2003. And they start out the story with Bishop Sedgwick Daniels, one of the city's most prominent black pastors, supported Democrats in past presidential elections, backing Bill Clinton and Al Gore. This fall, however, the bishop's broad face appeared on Republican Party flyers in the battleground state of Wisconsin, endorsing President Bush as the candidate who shares our views. What changed? Well, it might be that he got $1.5 million and a phone call from George W. Bush. Yep. Sure enough. Daniel's political conversion and similar transformations by black pastors across the nation form a little-known chapter in the playbook of Bush's 2004 reelection campaign and may mark the beginning of a political realignment long sought by senior White House advisor Karl Rove and other GOP strategists. What's happening is across the nation, particularly in African-American communities, black churches are becoming supporters of the GOP because they are getting money from the Republicans. And as the LA Times says, that's exactly the way many conservative Republican and evangelical leaders hoped the faith-based program will work. As the Reverend Lewis P. Shelton, chairman of the Conservative Traditional Values Coalition, said, quote, "The political benefits are unbelievable. The Democrats ought to have their heads examined for voting against this," end quote. There's no question, goes on the Los Angeles Times, that the Faith Initiative, combined with the administration's support for banning gay marriage and promoting school vouchers, has already helped reshape Bush's image among some traditionally Democratic African Americans. And they go on and on through this. In the crucial state of Ohio, this program may have had a huge difference. In Florida, where record black turnout in Democratic precincts nearly put Al Gore in the White House in 2000, Bush's support among African Americans in November rose 6 percentage points to 13%. It doubled, helping to increase the president's victory margin and avoid a repeat of the 2000 squeaker that inspired the recount. In all-important Ohio, Bush's vote tally among African Americans more than doubled his 2000 total, and he gained 7 percentage points to draw 16% of the black vote. If Bush had received the same proportion of black votes in Ohio in 2004 as he did in 2000, before he started passing out all this money to the black churches, the president's margin of victory would have narrowed from the actual 118,000 to about 25,000, which would have put it into question. In my opinion, it's already in question, but that's a whole other thing. Given the high number of provisional ballots filed in Ohio, said Bositis, Ohio would have become Florida, the legal battleground of 2004. The article goes on about Jim Towie, the guy that Bush hired to go out and pitch this thing. And where are they pitching it? Where are they passing this money out? It turns out they're passing it out to large black churches in battleground states. So the reason James Madison was so opposed to the merger of church and state was he did not want churches corrupted by politics. George W. Bush is doing just that right now. 10 minutes before they are.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Out of His Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
With a Workers Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. Union members for bus companies in Queens and Brooklyn have been on strike for more than a week. On Friday, talks between the city and the Amalgamated Transit Union collapsed, leaving no relief in sight for 70,000 daily bus riders. WIN correspondent Sarah Turner reports from New York City.
I have to go all the way to Manhattan to work, so I have to take this bus to the subway.
One local Queens resident expresses the concerns many riders are experiencing as the strike enters its second week. Union members for Command Bus Company and Green Bus Lines have been on strike since January 9th. Sal Badagalia is president of ATU Local 1181. He says talks center around better health care and benefits. He spoke after negotiations broke down.
Go on until they come back to the table what they promised.
The mayor says the existing bus franchise system is not working and is in negotiations with the bus line owners to buy their companies and transfer them to MTA. Union leaders are angry the mayor won't discuss retroactive pay increases for the 2 years workers have been without a contract.
They pulled the wage package off the table on a promise if and when the MTA eventually does take over, they will address our wage issues. 2 weeks ago, those wage issues were on the table, and now they're off.
John Longo is president of ATU Local 1179. Mayor Bloomberg responded from City Hall.
The city has done everything in its power to settle this dispute and get the buses rolling. The offer we made is simply the best the city can possibly do.
No new negotiations are scheduled, and riders, for the time being, will have to find another way to work. For WIN, I'm Sarah Turner in New York City.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see.
That's when George Bush comes out, eh? Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you 4.5 minutes before the hour. Today, the 19th of January, Wednesday. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. 580 days since treason was committed out in Joe Wilson's wife. 797 days since we started looking for weapons of mass destruction. 1,234 days since 9/11 happened. 29 days of corporate rule. Well, I'd say we're in the fifth year. We're going to the fifth year. 880 days since the anthrax attack. And Carol in Florida's on the line. Hey, Carol, what's up?
Hi. I'm just really glad to have found you on my computer. The first time I saw you was on C-SPAN several months ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I just wanted to say it's very funny. I turned on the computer and found you at the same time as a caller had just called in talking about Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very funny that he said that stuff because we saw yesterday on MSNBC, we're watching the highlights from Barbara Boxer's interrogation of Condoleezza Rice. And we were just talking about the Senate a little bit. And at one point before they cut away to commercial break, we saw Barack Obama having a very friendly chat with Condoleezza Rice. And they're smiling. And he was just thinking, my husband was thinking, he's just another one of them.
Yeah.
Just another person with a personal agenda who's not really going to push any major differences with the Democratic Party. And, you know, I had such great hope, especially after the speech he gave at the Democratic Convention.
Yeah, it's you know? Get along and go along. I mean, you see the same thing in the media. There's this kind of incestuous relationship between the folks in the media who are stars and wealthy, the anchors and the senior reporters for the networks and whatnot, and the politicians that they're covering who are by and large. I mean, there's only one member of the Senate who's not a multimillionaire, and that's Jim Jeffries here in Vermont. And it's like this old boy club, you know. It includes women now, but it's that's the mentality of it increasingly. And it's
well,
it's
corporate
tragic to
devil publicans that are all eating at the same trough.
Yeah,
my father once said.
Yeah. So here we have it. It's once again. Carol, thanks for the call and thanks for pointing that out.
Okay, thank you.
Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. The Congressman Chet Edwards of Texas, member of the Appropriations Committee, describes himself as a deeply religious Christian, repeatedly asked for accountability from Republicans. Where did this $1 billion go for faith-based initiatives? They won't tell him, a member of Congress. Dark day, strange days we live in, my friends.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Unite Here hotel workers in Washington, D.C. have overwhelmingly approved a very good contract, won through strong solidarity and smart tactics and timing. Unite Here Local 25 Secretary Treasurer John Boardman.
Virtually every major section of the contract we sought to change, we prevailed upon.
In a big victory for workers, Unite Here won the largest wage hikes in 25 years, 100% employer-paid health insurance, and a 30% increase in pensions. Workers at other hotels have noticed, and Boardman says it's time to organize.
We're already being contacted by workers in other hotels here in Washington who want to see the union come to their property. So we're going to take this and go out and organize.
Unite Here says there are changes to almost every article of the contract designed to improve conditions in the workplace and strengthen the rights of workers. Unite Here had threatened to strike during the inauguration unless they got a good contract.
The fallout of Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels' decision to end collective bargaining for state employees has begun. The International Union of Police Association Local 1041 voted unanimously to dissolve. In addition to representing state troopers, the local also represented the state's conservation officers. Keith Gill, former president of the local, said the decision was made because the union no longer had a purpose without the right to collectively bargain. The Republican governor canceled union contracts with nearly 25,000 state workers last week.
George W. Bush is using the Social Security Administration, including Social Security Associate Commissioner Andrew Biggs, to push privatization of Social Security. Biggs was the Cato Institute's assistant director on the project on Social Security privatization. Social Security employees, represented by the National Treasury Employees Union, resent the use of the Social Security Administration to push privatization propaganda. NTEU President Colleen Kelly says her members will join workers nationwide to oppose the undermining of Social Security. Kelly says defending Social Social Security will be a priority for Social Security Administration workers.
We will be making this one of our legislative priorities, and we will be working with all of those in the House and the Senate to make sure that they, too, understand the issues, the impact, and what the facts are around this issue, as well as the fiction.
Henry Aaron, a Social Security analyst at the Brookings Institution, says talk of Social Security crisis is nonsense in an effort to stampede the public.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most famous cigar country in the world is making moves to snuff out smoking. Statistics show that 4 out of 10 Cubans smoke. And of the 15,000 deaths from preventable cancer in Cuba each year, 30% of those have been linked to smoking. The island will ban smoking in most public areas. President Fidel Castro, who gave up cigars years ago, says that when Cubans give cigars away, they say, smoke them or give them to someone who smokes. But the best thing to do is to give them to your enemy. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Gosh, it's sad that the Bushites have not been able to provide protective armor for all of our troops in Iraq, resulting in untold numbers of needless deaths and maimings. But, well, the Pentagon has other priorities, such as playing with its Star Wars toys. There recently was another test to this boondoggle. The scheme is that the military industry can build a whiz-bang technological wonder that will allow a U.S. missile to be fired at an incoming enemy missile and shoot it out of the air. So far, the Pentagon has shoveled $80 billion into this smoke and mirrors stunt, with another $50 billion to be thrown at it in the next 5 years. I say smoke and mirrors because it doesn't work, and nearly all independent experts say it won't ever work, and it isn't even needed. Indeed, the Pentagon even rigged its previous tests, including putting beacons on the target missile so their Star Wars missile can find it easily, yet it still doesn't hit the target. The latest test was especially embarrassing. Instead of merely missing the target, this one couldn't even get off the ground. Pentagon Chief Donnie Rumsfeld, however, is undeterred, saying that critics who claim that his pet project doesn't work are misguided because, quote, what the definition of work is terribly important. Okay, Donnie, try this small dose of reality. Your system is so flawed that it cannot be fired if the weather is bad. Excuse my skepticism, but it's at least possible that an enemy might not wait for a perfectly clear, calm day to take a shot at us. This is Jim Hightower saying, the main thing that the Bushites' highly touted missile defense system can be counted on to hit is the federal budget. But they don't care, for it's all being deficit financed, paid in IOUs that our grandchildren will have to pay. Long after the Bushites are gone and their Star Wars scam has been assigned to the scrap heap of ridiculous waste, is there no other need in America that we could spend this money on?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Interesting discussion in the chat room about Kitty Kelly's book and Laura Bush being described as the go-to girl in college. If you wanted pot, you went to Barbara Bush. And how long she was putting up with abuse from her husband, threatening to leave him when he was drinking and apparently beating her up. Tough life. It must have been a real challenge for her for a number of years. Anyhow, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Tom Hartman, the website, tomhartman.com, the website. An email from Tom in Twin Cities. He talks about the disastrous conflation. Conflation, a fancy word for merging two things together and making something even larger, I suppose. Or at least merging two things together. The disastrous conflating of democracy and market economics. He talks about how Kevin Phillips, in the afterword to his book Wealth and Democracy, points this out. He goes into some length about it, rants at some length about it, how capitalism should be described as market economics. And as you know, I'm not an opponent of capitalism. I think it's a perfectly acceptable system as long as it's appropriately regulated, as it has been more or less at various times in the history of this country. As opposed to free markets, there is no such thing as a free market. And because, you know, markets exist in the context of we the people creating them. We create them out of them. But the problem is that the use of the phrase free market causes people to think that free markets are capitalism, and capitalism therefore must have something to do with freedom, which therefore must have something to do with democracy. And the reality is, as Adam Smith pointed out in 1776 in his book The Wealth of Nations, unrestrained markets, free markets, capitalism, can be a threat to democratic forms of government. And Smith was quite outspoken about this. How you know, great wealth would accumulate itself and then seek to assert or exert or both not only economic power, but also political power. Tom from Twin Cities says, it's about framing language. Limbaugh and his ilk constantly use the word freedom with markets and freedom and liberty with democracy. Ta-da, conflating mission complete, Orwellian. Yeah, good point. And here's an example of how this thing comes about, how this happens. Here in Vermont, here in the People's Republic, the great big huge headline front page story today was about a major crime that was committed in the state. As I mentioned before, we tend to lose more people and have more people injured in Iraq than we do as victims of crime here in Vermont. It's a small state. I believe we've lost now 7 soldiers in Iraq. But this was a major crime. William Betcher, I believe his name is pronounced, former chief executive officer of Fletcher Allen Healthcare, which is a big hospital over in Burlington, Vermont, pleaded guilty Tuesday to federal conspiracy charges. He could face up to 2 years in prison. He's also agreed to pay $733,210 in restitution to Fletcher Allen, the organization that he used to head up, the hospital. So here you have an example of a hospital being run by a guy who rips off the hospital. What a surprise, right? I mean, you say, in fact, the Vermont Attorney General, William Sorrell, said yesterday, my, how the mighty have fallen. Before today, Betcher was a free guy with a clean resume living on a yacht in Seattle. And he starts right now as a convicted felon. Bad day at the office. The point of this is, well, actually, let me juxtapose this. There was a great thread that was started on our message board. You can get to the message board by going to tomhartman.com and click on message board. And it was started by a member for Meta, number 4, M-E-T-T-A. And 4 Meta asked the question, does anybody know this piece of trivia? I'm trying to understand how HMOs started and why Ted Kennedy supported them at first. I think everybody would agree right now they're bad news. He's spoken against them recently, but why did he support them before? And this is, you know, over and over in the past I've talked about how When I was a kid growing up, you know, throughout the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s, most hospitals were not-for-profit corporations. They had to be nonprofit organizations. Most communities required it, where they were actually owned by the communities. I was born in a hospital in Grand Rapids, Michigan, which was owned by the county. I'm pretty sure it's called Kent County Hospital, as I recall. In all probability, owned by the county, certainly run by the county. And so you've got a situation where, because we, the people, collectively got together and said, okay, we're going to provide ourselves with a hospital. The hospital operated in a way and charged fees in a way that covered its costs. But it really wasn't trying to make a CEO rich. It wasn't paying off a board of directors with big bucks. It wasn't spinning off dividends for its stockholders. It wasn't producing profit. It was producing healthcare. Now, into this fray, so we had a system, and in fact, the same was true, by the way, of, by and large, of health insurance companies. Most states said, you know, health is something that is different than, for example, car insurance. Car insurance is not a life and death issue. You bang up your car, you got $3,000 worth of repair work to do. It's going to be a chunk of money out of your pocketbook. You pay $200 a year. I mean, back in those days, $100 a year, whatever it was. Into the insurance company, they do the repairs. So it's how insurance works. You have insurance for when you need it, and you pay into it actually when you don't need it. And it's okay, they said, for a company to make a profit on car insurance. In fact, it's okay to make a profit even on death insurance. They call it life insurance, but it's really death insurance. E.F. Stone started this thing back in the 1920s. I mean, started it big time, built an empire. He had a great motto, by the way. It was, do it now. When I was in my 20s, there's a foundation that he started that's devoted to helping entrepreneurs or encouraging entrepreneurs. And they don't give away money or anything. But they give away these great buttons or they used to. This was 30 years ago. I don't know if they're still around. And posters and things that say, do it now. And it was, you know, the whole thing. If you want to do something, get it started. Anyhow, E.F. Stone built a fortune in life insurance. But the communities got together and they said, you know, there is something special about health. About whether or not we are sick. That is qualitatively different than whether or not our car gets fixed or whether or not we get reimbursed if somebody dies. Not reimbursed, but, you know, whatever the word is. Make a payout if somebody dies. It goes beyond betting. You know, death insurance is basically a bet. So it's a bizarre situation. You're betting with the insurance company that you're going to die because you're putting the money down, right? So you're betting that you're going to die, and yet you're hoping that you're wrong. You're hoping that you're going to lose the bet. Figure that one out. But in any case, what the community said was health is qualitatively different. So when health is delivered from a hospital, it has to be not for profit. And when health is paid for in the form of health insurance, the health insurance company itself also has to be a not for profit organization, a nonprofit. And so the Blue Cross, Blue Shields of America were all nonprofits for years and years and years. In fact, in some states, a few still are, I believe. I know that just over the last few years, there's been talk about, well, here in Vermont, I don't know if it's happened yet or not. Frankly, I haven't been following it in the newspapers. It was a couple of years ago that it was a big deal, so it probably has happened, and now it's over, and that's why I'm not seeing it. There's this big thing about whether Blue Cross and Blue Shield should be allowed to go for profit. And we said, you know, we'd really rather have you be looking out for the interests of people's health, of your clients, than looking out for the interests of your stockholders. And where HMOs came into this equation is somebody had the brilliant idea, and it really was a brilliant idea, of why don't we kind of synthesize these two ideas of a non-for-profit hospital and a not-for-profit insurance company and roll it out in a way that will actually reduce, that will not only protect people if they get sick, but will reduce the amount of sickness. You recall HMO stands for Health Maintenance Organization, not Sickness Repair Organization. See, now what we have is a sickness industry. It makes money when people get sick. HMOs were an attempt to have a health industry. That is, an industry that was doing its job when people didn't need it. Now, a for-profit corporation could not, you know, if that's the definition you're operating under, could not operate in that environment. I mean, you can't create a for-profit corporation whose goal is to have, over time, less and less of its services be needed. So HMO, the whole idea of an HMO was you pay a little bit of money in every month, and it'll be less even than health insurance, even though that was nonprofit. Now, why would it be less than health insurance? Because there are certain rules you have to follow. You have to have an annual physical. We're going to make available to you programs on diet and nutrition. We're going to make available to you programs on how to stop smoking. You know, in other words, it was all about preventative medicine. So people didn't get sick as often. And when they did get serious illnesses, they were caught earlier. And so they were less costly to treat. And so the union supported the HMOs. Ted Kennedy supported the HMOs because they had to get certain waivers and exemptions and whatnot. And they got some government grants. The government supported HMOs. It was a good idea. Then along came Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan, who had, you know, stripped out subsidies for the University of California, had ended free public education, free public college education in the state of California. And he looked at HMOs and said, hey, there's a profit opportunity here for American business, and cut off the federal subsidies. No more we the people helping us out to keep well. And the HMOs said, well, what are we going to do? And the Reagan administration said, why don't you go to Wall Street? Convert yourself to for-profit. Raise some money. Get into the business world. And they did. And that's why HMOs are now, you know, these rather bizarre predatory creatures that they have morphed into. Many of them. And not the fine, noble institutions that they once were. So that's in answer to the question. And several members, including Rama and Sannyasa, had done a great job of pointing that out. That's what happened with HMOs in America. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
This job is so much more than a half-hour newscast.
Brian Williams on the NBC Nightly News.
These are very serious times. This is about our world, our children. This is about as high as the stakes
get. Ongoing engagements, firefighting.
Is my world safe? Is my nation safe? Is my family safe? That's our job. That's our duty. That's all that counts.
Reporting America's story. NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams.
My job is to tell the story of our lives.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider the Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
How many wrinkles in a pickle? How many hairs in a head? How many waves in the ocean? How many crumbs in bread? But last but not least, baby, most of all, why do I mumble every time you call? Because you're strange to me, baby.
And welcome back. There you go. 25 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Hey, how about if we were just to take in Iraq, what if we were to simply say, put in a strong man who would, like, just summarily execute people that he didn't like? What do you think? We can't put Saddam back into power because he's kind of taken. I mean, you know, we've got him locked up, and we've kind of sullied his reputation and all that kind of thing. But what if we got somebody just like him? What if we got somebody just like him? A former, this from the Sydney Morning Herald, reporting, this is the largest newspaper in Australia, reporting on a New Yorker story, a magazine in the United States, a New Yorker. A former Jordanian government minister has told the New Yorker that an American official confirmed to him that Iraqi interim prime minister Iyad Alawi executed six suspected insurgents at a Baghdad police station last year. We reported on that, by the way, at the time that it was reported. The claim is in an extensive profile of Dr. Alawi, written for this week's issue of the magazine by an American journalist, John Lee Anderson, the author of The Fall of Baghdad. Writing about his research in Jordan in December, Anderson says, a well-known former government minister told me that an American official had confirmed that the killing took place, saying to him, quote, what a mess we're in. We got rid of one SOB only to get another one, end quote. Pretty remarkable. Dr. Alawi denied the allegations, of course. Anderson writes, the man described how Alawi had been taken to seven suspects who were made to stand against a wall in a courtyard of the police station, their faces covered. After being told of their alleged crimes by a police official, Alawi had asked for a pistol and then shot each prisoner in the head. One of the men survived, by the way. Afterward, the witness said Alawi had declared to those present, this is how we must deal with the terrorists. The witness said he approved of Alawi's act, adding that in any case, the terrorists were better off dead, for they had been tortured for days. This is what we have now instead of Saddam, or as Laura would sing.
When I was just a little girl, I knew I'd marry a president.
Ah, yes.
I had a song then going through my head, but no idea what it meant. Get Saddam, Saddam. I felt that would be the key.
So maybe now what we need to do is bring him back.
National unity. Get Saddam, Saddam.
The Laura Bush, this is from Jim Turr.
We beat him not just once, but twice. Both times he slipped through our little hands.
Yeah, so enough of Laura, I suppose. It's Laura doing Doris Day. Get Saddam. Should we bring back Saddam Hussein? I mean, is that what we're doing? In Alawi, do we have another? Is that what it's going to take, for that matter? I mean, set aside morality and ethics and just be purely pragmatic. Is that what it's going to take to stabilize Iraq? Is it going to take another strong man? Alan in Alabama on the line. Hey, Alan, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to change the subject a little bit.
All righty.
The Democrats in politics these days seem so overwhelmed by all these Republicans. I was wondering, what can we do to support them?
Yeah, send them money. And contact, you know, send them contacts, send them emails. It's really quite remarkable, Alan. Just recently, the FCC has changed its policies as a result of Democrats contacting them on certain issues. You've got Barbara Boxer. She sent out an email this morning to her supporters. She said over 40,000 people have contacted her supporting what she has said about Condi Rice. I mean, that's what we need to do. And boxer.senate.gov is her website. Go and send her an email saying thank you. You know, get involved in local politics, participate, check out Democracy for America, go to a local meetup, write letters to the editor of your local newspaper, lots of things. Alan, okay. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Your voice is breaking up there. 29 minutes past the hour.
Mom, I can't believe you asked Rick all those questions. Where do you live and who are your parents? It's so embarrassing.
Getting to know your kid's friends isn't easy, but if you don't, he's more likely to do drugs.
Geez, you have to know everything?
Actually, Sean, I do. Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Unite Here hotel workers in Washington, D.C. have overwhelmingly approved a very good contract, won through strong solidarity and smart tactics and timing. Unite Here Local 25 Secretary Treasurer John Boardman.
Virtually every major section of the contract we sought to change, we prevailed upon.
In a big victory for workers, Unite Here won the largest wage hikes in 25 years, 100% employer-paid health insurance, and a 30% increase in pensions. Workers at other hotels have noticed, and Boardman says it's time to organize.
Already being contacted by workers in other hotels here in Washington who want to see the union come to their property. So we're going to take this and go out and organize.
Unite Here says there are changes to almost every article of the contract designed to improve conditions in the workplace and strengthen the rights of workers. Unite Here had threatened to strike during the inauguration unless they got a good contract.
The fallout of Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels' decision to end collective bargaining for state employees has begun. The International Union of Police Association Local 1041 voted unanimously to dissolve. In addition to representing state troopers, the local also represented the state's conservation officers. Keith Gill, former president of the local, said the decision was made because the union no longer had a purpose without the right to collectively bargain. The Republican governor canceled union contracts with nearly 25,000 state workers last week.
George W. Bush is using the Social Security Administration, including Social Security Associate Commissioner Andrew Biggs, to push privatization of Social Security. Biggs was the Cato Institute's assistant director on the project on Social Security privatization. Social Security employees, represented by the National Treasury Employees Union, resent the use of the Social Security Administration to push privatization propaganda. NTEU President Colleen Kelly says her members will join workers nationwide to oppose the undermining of Social Security. Kelly says defending Social Security will be a priority for Social Security Administration workers.
We will be making this one of our legislative priorities, and we will be working with all of those in the House and the Senate to make sure that they, too, understand the issues, the impact, and what the facts are around this issue, as well as the fiction.
Henry Aaron, a Social Security analyst at the Brookings Institution, says talk of Social Security crisis is nonsense in an effort to stampede the public.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The most famous cigar country in the world is making moves to snuff out smoking. Statistics show that 4 out of 10 Cubans smoke. And of the 15,000 deaths from preventable cancer in Cuba each year, 30% of those have been linked to smoking. The island will ban smoking in most public areas. President Fidel Castro, who gave up cigars years ago, says that when Cubans give cigars away, they say, smoke them or give them to someone who smokes. But the best thing to do is to give them to your enemy. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Yeah, but that's not the thing to do. Here's this Barbara Boxer's letter in answer to your question, Alan, from Alabama. Good question. This is what she said. Senator Barack Boxer sent this letter out to people who had sent her a, you know, good on you, thank you for your help letter. The Dear Jerry, this is dear blank, right? Fill in the blank. This morning I entered the Senate hearing room with a wonderful feeling, knowing that over 40,000 of you stood behind me as I sought to hold Condoleezza Rice accountable for her many actions leading up to the war in Iraq and beyond. I talked about your support during my opening statement, and knowing you were with me gave me the energy I needed to keep fighting for the truth. I hope you had a chance to watch some of Condoleezza Rice's confirmation hearings today, because if you did, I'm sure you'll share my feelings. I'm disappointed and I'm frustrated, writes Barbara Boxer, because I don't think Dr. Rice has been forthcoming in our quest for the truth. Time after time, Dr. Rice had the opportunity to set the record straight on many issues, and on issue after issue, she failed to do so. She failed to set the record straight on the hyped-up nuclear threat leading up to the war in Iraq. She failed to do it on the total number of trained Iraqi security forces, which is a key to the administration's exit strategy there. She failed to do it on her misstatements about al-Qaeda operating in Iraq. And she failed to do it on the U.S. policy regarding torture. This last issue is the most troubling one, writes Barbara Boxer, as it was clearly demonstrated that while Dr. Rice speaks out against torture, she actually personally intervened to kill an anti-torture provision in a recent intelligence bill. So I'm not going to back down, says Senator Barbara Boxer. I'm going to keep asking the tough questions, illuminating the many inconsistencies, falsehoods, and disturbing revelations in Dr. Rice's previous statements about Iraq, the war on terrorism, and the use of torture, holding her accountable for the failures of our foreign policy. This is awesome. Her website, boxer.senate.gov. So, I don't have her email on here, but packforachange.com, by the way, is somehow involved with this. PACFORACHANGE, packforachange.com, is somehow involved in the work that Barbara Boxer is doing. I'm not sure exactly what. Granted, today's New York Times, citing the News and Observer in Raleigh, North Carolina, soldiers at Fort Bragg, now get this, soldiers at Fort Bragg are given wallet-sized plastic cards inscribed with tips and talking points to use if interviewed by reporters. I mean, speaking of Armstrong Williams, Armstrong will give you $250,000 of taxpayer money if you will talk up No Child Left Behind. Talk about in the second hour of our program, all the details we went through about how George Bush in the last 2 years gave over, actually in 1 year alone, in 2003, gave over $1 billion to largely African-American churches in largely swing states, and thus saw his support in the African-American community double in Florida and Ohio. Some would say, giving him the presidency, it's assuming that the vote hadn't been hijacked in the first place. Armstrong Williams up to it. It's amazing. The outreach, this is really two stories here. And one is the outreach to the African-American community by the Bush administration. If you can't get an ethnic group or a voting bloc to go along with your policies, then buy them off, on the one hand. And you know, Armstrong Williams, who had been speaking out against No Child Left Behind, suddenly saw the light when he got $250,000 of your money and mine, by the way, out of the education budget. This is money that otherwise would have gone to schools to buy textbooks. Just like right now, money that otherwise would be used by the Social Security Administration to pay grandma's Social Security check is right now being used to pay for a PR campaign to convince us that there's a crisis with a system that is not experiencing a crisis, that's paying out its checks just fine and is going to keep on doing so for at least 40 years, thank you very much. And even then, we'll be able to pay out 80% forever and can pay out 100% if we simply raise the cap. Right now, you only pay Social Security taxes on the first $80,000 of your income, so millionaires are excluded. Well, if you simply say, hey, let's take Steve Forbes' advice and make it a flat tax. Everybody pays the same. You're a millionaire, you pay the same as somebody who makes $40,000 a year. Same percentage. If we did that, if we simply did that, just turn the Social Security tax into a flat tax rather than a tax that only hits people who make $80,000 a year or less, we would have solved its problem for all time. In fact, we would be able to increase benefits. But no, that's not going to make money for Wall Street. But I digress. Anyhow, so here we have, according to New York Times, soldiers at Fort Bragg are given wallet-sized plastic cards inscribed with tips and talking points to use if interviewed by reporters. This administration is so good, frankly, at, or bad, how do you say it? They are so competent at conveying a message, whether it's true or not. It's not about regard for the truth. It's about being on point. I mean, they really understand this well. And Bush did this through the campaign, did it very well, very competently. And they're continuing to. Absolutely continuing to. The U.S. and Congress knew that Saddam was smuggling oil. I don't know if you have heard about this rather remarkable. The Clinton and Bush, of course, you're not going to hear about this on right-wing talk radio. This, even though Bill Clinton's involved in it, because it doesn't reflect poorly on the United Nations. Instead, in every year since 1991, when George Herbert Walker Bush was president, we have officially allowed illegal smuggling of oil from Saddam Hussein, specifically from, you know, I mean, it's money going into his personal account, right? Or accounts that he controlled, from Saddam Hussein to largely Jordan and Turkey, who are allies of ours. Some went to Syria as well. But our, you know, what we were looking out for Jordan and Turkey. The Clinton and Bush administrations, actually it should be the Bush, Clinton, and Bush administrations, not only knew, but told the U.S. Congress that Iraq was smuggling oil to Turkey and Jordan, and in both cases recommended continuing military and financial aid to these countries seen as important allies, writes Mark Turner in New York, in today's Financial Times. the sort of Wall Street Journal of the UK. Recent revelations, he writes, that Saddam Hussein was able to raise billions of dollars in illicit revenue in defiance of international sanctions have prompted savage criticism of the United Nations by members of Congress and right-wing commentators. Yet two letters sent by the State Department to Congress in 1998 and 2002 clearly show that successive U.S. administrations knew of sanctions busting and turned a blind eye to it. Now, is this going to raise to the level of news in the mainstream media? There's no constituency group for this. There's no bunch of right-wingers who think that the UN is some horrible thing and therefore it needs to be done away with because, gee, they might enforce the Geneva Conventions. They might have an international tribunal and war crimes court that could hold us accountable if we're breaking international laws. I don't think there's a constituency for this story, so I doubt you're going to hear it in the mainstream media. Nobody's going to make money off this story. It's just embarrassing to the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, and the most recent Bush administration. That's all. Just embarrassing. In both cases, as most policymakers knew at the time, writes Mark Turner, the administration judged that maintaining constructive relations with the two countries was in the, quote, national interest. It issued a waiver on legal restrictions on aid for countries known to violate sanctions, and Congress duly authorized and appropriated the funds. A waiver. We knew that Turkey and Jordan were giving Saddam Hussein billions of dollars. And according to the sanctions law, if any country was illegally conducting business with Iraq, which, by the way, at that time, Halliburton was doing as well, but they were doing it through an offshore subsidiary in an island nation that didn't care if there were sanctions because they don't export anything. But here we had Jordan and Turkey wanting to buy military hardware from us. And our law said you can't sell military hardware to a company that is to a country rather that is giving money to Saddam Hussein to break the sanctions, the oil sanctions. And Congress passed waivers to this. They said, yeah, we're going to look the other way. In fact, Charles Dolfer, remember him, the guy who was he replaced David Kay. He was, you know, chief weapons inspector, then became the Iraq Survey Group. Next it's going to be the Iraq kind of looking around and wandering around and looking under rock. You know, well, actually, they've given it up. They've stopped. But head of the Iraq Survey Group, he said last year that Iraq's smuggling to and from neighboring countries was by far the largest source of revenue for Hussein's regime, accounting for $8 out of $11 billion. Its single biggest source of illicit income was trade with Jordan, at least until 2000, after which trade with Syria and Turkey grew in importance. So here we have, you've probably seen the King of Jordan over here talking to Larry King and his wife. King Abdullah, is it? I believe. Is that it, Higgins? Yeah. Okay. And talking to his and who was busting the sanctions? Who was violating the law? Jordan, our good friend. Continued U.S. assistance would provide the Jordanian government with, quote, some flexibility to pursue policies which are of critical importance to U.S. objectives in the Middle East, end quote, which included the Middle East peace process. So we're just going to look the other way. We're going to say, we're going to pass a law, we're going to make it illegal to do this, but by the way, if we need your help, we'll ignore it. Sort of like the SNL debacle, you know, when they tossed a couple folks to the wolves, or Enron, another. I mean, on and on these things go. You have these essentially criminal enterprises, given the way that they're run, and they'll get a few scapegoats here and there, and if they can find a woman who's a Democrat, they'll throw her in jail as quickly as possible, even if she had nothing to do with corporate crime. Speaking, of course, of Martha Stewart. who went to jail for lying to a prosecutor, not even for insider trading. But anyhow, when we said to Jordan, that's fine, you keep giving money, $8 billion to Saddam Hussein. You keep giving money to him. And by the way, we're going to go around, we're going to yell to the whole world, this guy's building, he's busting sanctions. But we're going to let you do it. Mark Turner in the Financial Times notes, that sent a message that the smuggling would be tolerated. The wording of a letter in 2002, despite being issued under President George W. Bush, was almost identical. It noted the waiver had been given to Jordan every year since 1991, that would be by his daddy, when UN sanctions were first imposed on Iraq. On it goes. On it goes. It's a good time for a conservative alert here. Media ignores terrorist plans for inaugural. It's our second conservative alert for the day. This from Accuracy in Media. Accuracy in Media is this right-wing crank group that has been actually quite successful over the last decade or so in scaring the bejesus out of the mainstream press. I mean, they've done it. I mean, they've done a very good job of intimidating the mainstream press, but they're getting more and more shrill. And so we'll see how long their credibility, what little credibility they may have left lasts. Here's this news release. Communist and anarchist groups are planning to disrupt the inaugural. And the group advises its members to, they're talking about this communist group. That's the Workers' World Party. Well, these folks really terrify me. It's workers of the world, right? Yeah, it's amazing. The group advises its members to understand the details of, quote, state security planning, end quote, including road closings and security checkpoints for the inaugural, and to, here's where it gets dangerous, blend in with the crowds by taking careful consideration concerning one's wardrobe. See, what they're talking about is this turn your back on Bush protest. As Bush's motorcade goes by, people who are in the crowd, who have passed as Republican, are going to turn their back on his car. And so people are like getting haircuts and, you know, borrowing a coat and tie from their neighbors or whatever, so that they can show, or pulling out their best clothes, you know, so that they can look Republican. So that they can stand there in the cold and turn their back on Bush as his car goes by. And here, Accuracy and Media, all hysterical about this. And their main hysteria is that the Washington Post has not talked about it. They want the Washington Post to freak out. The anti-Bush activities planned by some liberals and radicals and ultra-leftists are intended to be polite. This says the Washington Post. This has them just hysterical. How dare they? Polite! Polite! Yeah, turning your back on Bush. It's polite. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa.
Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A major power blackout sheds some light on problems with air pollution. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In August 2003, 8 states and the province of Ontario lost electricity when power plants and electrical grids shut down. Researchers at the University of Maryland saw a unique opportunity in the midst of this blackout. It was a chance to find out how much air pollution originates at power plants. Laxin Marufu is an atmospheric chemist at the University of Maryland in College Park. He and his colleagues have been flying over Maryland for more than a decade to measure air quality. Marufu says the air is polluted by a lot of different compounds that come from a variety of sources. He says it's hard to determine how much pollution comes from each individual source, but the blackout suddenly provided an opportunity to study the effect of emissions from power plants.
By turning off power plants, while all other factors were kept fairly constant, it provided a unique opportunity to quantify directly and for the very first time the contribution of power plants to regional haze and ozone.
Just 24 hours after the blackout began, Marufu and his colleagues were in the air. They flew downwind of the blackout area and took air quality measurements. They compared their results with measurements taken before the blackout in the same locations. Marufu says they got a big surprise.
What was surprising was not the fact that we saw an improvement in air quality. We expected that. But what surprised us most was the magnitude. We did not expect it to be that big.
Marufu says emissions of sulfur dioxide dropped by as much as 90% and ozone dropped by about 50%. Marufu says that rapid change is encouraging. He says it shows that effective emission controls at power plants could improve air quality along the East Coast, and they could do it quickly. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Folks in the chat room discussing whether or not we should spend a dime tomorrow, and if so, where. I find this interesting, this not one damn dime day, which is tomorrow officially. The dime, of course, having Franklin Roosevelt's picture on it. The cons wanting to replace it with Ronnie Reagan. And Ronald Reagan, let's be respectful. And I don't respect his policies, but I think that he was a decent person, but that's a whole other thing. He was a lousy president and an even worse governor. But the point is, should people spend a dime tomorrow with ethical businesses and local businesses, or should they simply not spend a dime anywhere? And I find this interesting because I've been getting all these emails from progressives, most of them yesterday and today, saying, well, you know, we can make an exemption from the not one dime day. We can exempt ourselves for locally owned businesses
or we can exempt ourselves for the advertisers of progressive talk radio shows. I like that. Or actually, I got one today from Mark Crispin Miller, the author. He was just passing along somebody else's. It was a forwarded piece, and it was about let's exempt ourselves with regard to Costco, because Costco gives money to Democrats because they're unionized, because a cashier at Costco can make actually a decent living and raise a family, you know, if they have a full-time job there, and like that. And so, you know, I think that the original intent was to try and create such a big national, we all noticed that for one day there was a drop in GDP. But it's not going to happen. It's not going to be noticed. And so I think really the broader principle is the important one, and that is spending your money where, you know, intelligently, where you think it's going to do some good. Now, this is not the vote with your dollars theory, in as much as voting with your dollars means that those with more dollars have more votes, and that's not democracy. This isn't saying that this is a solution. But it is something I think that we all have an obligation to do, and that is to intelligently participate in the economy, intelligently spend our money, intelligently choose where and how we're going to participate in the economy and spend our money. So not one damn dime day tomorrow. Should you spend not one dime? I certainly wouldn't buy gas or oil or anything from these Republican corporations, the big energy companies. You know, fill your tank today. give tomorrow a break. Certainly would not go shopping at Walmart, big contributor to the Republicans. But that's just me. You do whatever you want. It's going to be a day of mourning, I think, for many Americans. And it's going to be very interesting to see how this whole turn your back on Bush thing shakes out. We will be reporting as it progresses. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage